Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Chad and I are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog, which I will post a link to below this interview. Mark, we'll talk about a number of different markets here, but we have to start off with the gold market because gold went through more or less a flash crash on Sunday night, early Monday morning, even before the U.S. markets were open. And that was really the culmination of a pretty quick decline. It was about 3 days of trading where gold dropped over $100, almost $150, I think. And it quickly reversed that, though. It took the rest of this week for gold to climb its way back, but we're pretty much ending this week at the same level that gold more or less ended last week at. So gold did take back a lot of that flash crash. If anyone was away for this week, it's really just a short blip on the chart that really doesn't have that much impact, I don't think, other than the fact that it was just another test of that about 1670 to 1680 region. Mark, what's your takeaway from that flash crash that we saw after or outside of U.S. market hours in gold?
Yeah, just amazing. I mean, we've seen the flash crashes in other parts of the capital markets. This one on gold, I think, how quick it took place. Like you say, that was really it. And I think that emotionally, people got stopped out of their gold position, very hard to jump back in, even though that was the right thing to do. And it seems to me that what's happened in the last few days is that, so for me, the sell-off in gold really began from the August 4th high near that 1830. And so for today's high, we're just passing that Fibonacci retracement almost at 62%. So for me, it's closing the week strongly, new highs for the week. And so where do we go from here? I'm afraid that we have to go back and really test above that $1,800 level again, go back to those early August highs. But I think that gold's been helped by a couple of other things too. Two things in particular. One is the sort of the pullback in U.S. interest rates. You know, we had CPI and PPI this week that really stabilized on a year-over-year basis. And I think that took some pressure off U.S. interest rates. And so that's the first thing. And the other thing that's happened alongside that pullback in interest rates has been the pullback in the U.S. dollar. And both of those things really took place in the second half of the week. And then definitely gold put on about $50 in the last couple of days.
Yeah, Mark, I was going to ask you about that because at the beginning of the week, after the flash crash Sunday night into Monday, the dollar was rising. It was back above 93. And a lot of pundits came out and said, it's heading up higher. It's going to go 94, 95. But we've seen it roll over a little bit in weekend, which has underpinned some strength in gold for the balance of the week. And as you noted, rates are lower, which typically would have helped gold, especially with the spread between rates and inflation making real rates more negative. But we weren't seeing that at all to start the week. And now we've kind of balanced out to where we ended last week, as Corey mentioned. So how much more do you think the dollar and rates will play into it? Or is there any other narrative that's going to move gold? Because ultimately, it's going to have to break that 1815 support resistance up above, or it's going to have to fall below that 1675 support at the bottom. So what do you think is ultimately going to move the gold market medium term out of this trading range it's been in?
Yes, I think that's a good question. I think that what's going to happen, I think that there's three like competing forces. One, of course, is COVID. The other is U.S. Fed policy. And I think that's going to be coming to a head soon with Jackson Hole conference at the end of the month and then the September FOMC meeting. But so for me, it's still the real drivers is the relative strength of the world economy and as it's reflected through U.S. policy, U.S. monetary policy and the dollar. I just think that the challenge with gold, of course, is that some people are arguing that with crypto making a big comeback in the last couple of weeks, that takes some of the shine away from gold. And I think we'll have to see what happens, like you say, up above those 1800 levels to see what's there as far as is this going to be a breakout to the upside. But I think that, for me, the key issue is if it is Fed policy, what's going to happen? And I think that my sense is announcement at the end of August, hinted at August, and then the real formal announcement in September, allowing the Fed to taper probably at the December FOMC meeting. Now, I think that in the big picture things, we have to look for higher U.S. interest rates. Doesn't mean the Fed's going to hike rates immediately, but I think that on a medium-term basis, this 130 basis points or 125 basis points for the 10-year is too low. And like you mentioned, Ted, you've got a deeply negative real interest rates. So if you, if the big picture is rates are going to rise in the U.S. and rise in other countries, not just emerging markets, but other countries in the developed world, it's hard for me to see how gold goes back up and tests that, say, that 2000 level that we saw previously.
So, Mark, does that mean you think gold is going to be in a bear market here? Or do you see gold putting in some sort of a bottom around that 17 or 1670 level where it bottomed early morning Monday? What's your assessment of the gold chart and big picture gold market? Where is the trend? Is it going to continue lower, or are we finally going to start moving higher again in gold?
Yeah, I just don't see that the big driver to lift us. Of course, there's geopolitical uncertainties, whether this is going on in Afghanistan, where apparently the U.S. is going to send another 3,000 troops in to evacuate the other people that are still there. So there's a lot of things that could drive gold, but I think it's those kind of events are only short-term drivers. And that on a medium term, I think a week ago we were talking about it when gold was still holding near the 1780 area. I was suggesting that we finish the year near 1750. And I think that still is a good view. But of course, in the short term, maybe move up higher. But medium term, I think we've got to look, we got to think that even if rates fall from here, it's a possibility. I think that the greater possibility, the probability is rates rise.
One more quick question here, Mark, regarding gold. What about that argument that look at all the money that's been printed and look at the money that's continuing to be printed from central banks? That's what a lot of gold bugs are pointing to as the long-term catalyst for gold moving higher.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that in some countries, like especially countries that have weak banking systems, sure. But in the U.S., in Canada, in Europe, I don't see people clamoring for gold. I see them trying to do other things. For example, people are worried about higher inflation in Mexico. So there's been a big, strong demand for their inflation-linked bond, and the government is happy to print more of them. Brazil, where Brazil probably became one of the biggest buyers of gold, of central bank, in the last 2 months. I think June might have been a record month of Brazil central bank buying gold. So there is an official bid for gold. I just don't think that we have the. I just don't think gold acts like that for most of us. For those of us who are fortunate to live in the in countries that have highly developed capital markets.
Yeah, Mark, and also I would say that the currency markets play into this theme as well as the rates do, just because if there is dollar strength, it's typically a headwind for gold. They can move up together and they can move down together. They don't have to be inversely related. But I'd be interested to get your take on what do you make of the global currency markets? Because if the dollar's not out there in isolation by itself, it's buoyed against, you know, a basket of other currencies. And so basically, if the dollar weakens and rolls over, as you had mentioned, part of your longer term thesis is that may happen, couldn't that be another driver for the precious metals for investors?
Yeah, no, I think you're right that a reversal to the downside of the dollar could help gold, especially if it's coupled with these other factors, concern about debt and whatnot. I think that in the currency market, still, what's happened in the last couple of days is that the dollar's upside momentum has faded a bit. Some key levels held. 117 in the euro, which is not only the low for the year, but it's also a key retracement of the whole rally we've had since March of 2020. And other currencies have key levels too. The Aussie, 73 cents. Sterling dipped a little bit below 138, held its 200-day moving average. Canadian dollar held its 200-day moving average. So I think that in the very short run, the dollar might have put in a short-term high, a small pullback. We're trading near 118 in the euro, which is new highs for the week. We could go up a bit more, maybe another half a cent or so. There's not a lot of big picture economic data coming out next week that'll really shake things up. Again, the focus will be on the central banks. In the U.S., we do get retail sales and industrial production. Both of those, you know, the big shocker, really, and this is what's going to color a lot of people's views for next week, is that today we saw the University of Michigan's consumer confidence figures, and Americans have been, it's been a big blow to confidence. In fact, the University of Michigan confidence reading fell to its lowest level since 2011. It was a huge shock, and I think that's what helped depress U.S. rates a little bit into the weekend and helped drag the dollar down. And I think that next week, if it gets coupled with softness in retail sales, it'll just confirm that maybe my bearish or less positive scenario, I should say, where the U.S. economy is peaked and the Fed is being forced to tighten monetary policy in a slowing economy, period. That comes back to the fore, I think.
Mark, what about commodities in terms of the drivers here? Obviously, central banks are a key driver, but also China. That's always a focus when it comes to some of the commodities even outside of precious metals, base metals and different commodities that China sometimes stockpiles, sometimes releases some of those into the market. Any moves out of China that you're paying attention to for commodities investors?
Yeah, I think there's two big things to keep an eye on. One is it's kind of a bit of a story, and it is that China produces more than half of the world's steel. And it's under pressure, both domestically and internationally, to reduce its steel output. China's steel output actually increased in the first half of the year. So it looks like they're doubling efforts to slow things down in the second half of the year. And if the steel output slows, that means the demand for iron ore slows. And what we've seen in past couple of weeks is iron ore prices have fallen by about a quarter. And so there's all kinds of ramifications from that. So I think China, so that's what I'd be watching there, China iron ore market. But the other thing to note, I think, is China has been is a big grain buyer. Of course, U.S., Canadian, Australia, Brazilian grains, crops. And the couple days ago, the USDA revised down it's the size of the harvest for a whole range of the grains, corn, wheat, soy, cotton, and sugar as well. And so this has pushed up prices, and you can see this also reflected in the CRB index. So China's demand just comes on top of perhaps a weaker harvest and low inventories. So those are two areas, sort of interesting commodity areas, I think, now relating with China. Iron ore, as they cut back on steel, and grains, which are just exacerbating what appears to be a global shortage.
Well, Mark, just on this topic of commodities in China, another thing that's happened in the last few months is China has started making strategic partnerships with businesses and offloading some of their base metals. So be it iron ore, be it copper, nickel, rare earths, different things. They've been supplying not just in the U.S., but in Australia and a lot of European countries with metals that they've stockpiled directly and using that to keep the speculation in check, so to speak. And that brought down a lot of the commodity sector. But at the same time, we've got this big infrastructure bill in the U.S. and other countries are proposing the same thing. And the world is continuing to electrify. They're going to need more copper. They're going to need more silver. They're going to need more of these metals. What's the balance between China's role as the main driver for the last commodity supercycle and the rest of the world that still needs these commodities? Couldn't there be other drivers for the commodities besides just China as we look to these big infrastructure bills?
Yeah, no, it is interesting. Huh? I mean, what China is doing with inventories, you know, they ended up buying a lot of these metals to help support prices. I don't know why we, the U.S., Europe, we do the same thing with money, right? That's what partly the Fed is. Fed and the central banks are warehousing. They're taking money, bonds, off the market and will release them, sell them at some point later when the economies are stronger. The U.S. does the same thing with oil. You know, I was mentioning before that in the infrastructure bill, one of the ways they're going to finance at least part of it is through the sale of some of the oil from the strategic reserves. This is being done for a political decision. This is a way to raise money so they can get enough people to, you know, enough of the legislature to support the infrastructure. China, it seems to me, is like playing it a little bit differently. They're using just solid, good economic reasons to release some of their supply into the market. I don't know. I mean, I think that the way they do things, of course, it's directly the business. But I think in general, the idea of a country's trying to help manage inventory liquidity, you know, we're very critical of central banks and they don't provide enough liquidity or too much liquidity. But I don't know why we can't expand those arguments that we use for money and apply to commodity. I just wonder, too, when we think about commodities, and so a country does infrastructure and how does that like feed into the commodity space? I think you have to go, who's going to build those parts, those motors, the iron girders for bridges, railroad ties. My sense is that China is still one of the, you know, the largest manufacturer of the world. Some of that is spilling out to other areas in East Asia. Vietnam is a great example. You know, the U.S. trade deficit with Vietnam has more than doubled over the past year or so. I'm just not sure that the infrastructure, remember, the U.S. bill of $100 trillion, that's going to be over 10 years. So, and also the other thing I'd say about the infrastructure, it sounds like it's very, very labor intensive, but a lot of the products that go into it are really capital intensively made. Rather than like, I mean, I hear you what you say about like, say, copper, iron ore, steel, but so much of the infrastructure that the U.S. is focusing on is not going to be so much materials intensive.
Interesting comments there, Mark. When it comes to big picture, though, what do we need to be focusing on? Is it still simply the Fed if they're going to tighten, and other central banks if the other central banks get further ahead of the Fed, that might force their hand? Is that still a key focus for the markets and metals?
I don't know how much the Federal Reserve really follows what, say, other central banks do. And I'll give you an example. Next week, it's possible that the Reserve Bank of New Zealand hikes rates. If they don't hike rates here in August, it's coming soon, probably before the end of the year. And the same thing with the Central Bank of Norway. They meet next week as well. It looks like they've indicated a hike in September. They're going to be moving ahead of us. Canada has begun tapering ahead of the Fed. The Bank of England has been a bit hawkish with their recent meeting, suggesting a rate hike is coming. The market's got it sort of pricing it in for the second half of next year, too. My sense is what to focus on. Again, I think it's the evolution of the Delta virus. And Fed officials are really saying that they don't expect it to have such profound impact. Partly because people have made the adjustment already. We hadn't gone back to normal, whatever that normal is. So they're looking for less impact from this Delta surge. So I'd be watching that. It's not just, like you say, it's not just in the U.S., but we've seen other countries that China is having a serious bout. It's closing down ports. Maybe this is what we should have talked about with Chad about the commodities. Because of the virus, China's closed down one of the most important ports, or parts of an important port. And that's also going to be a disruptive force. I'd be paying attention to, I think that the flash consumer confidence number we had earlier today is just a snapshot, but we should be, it should be sending us a yellow flag and to see if this is picked up in other data. Generally, I'd say next week, probably quiet until we get to Jackson Hole. And that means that we could get choppy trading ranges and these pockets of illiquidity. I think in general, though, we're going to be like sort of consolidating what we've already done, and that's pricing in a December 2022 rate hike.
December 2022. Hey, that's how long we're going to have to wait. We'll see what the Fed says. All eyes, or it seems like a lot of eyes on the Jackson Hole meeting coming up. And if the Fed even starts talking a little bit more hawkishly, who knows when they'll follow through with those rate hikes, though, and what will actually trigger that? A lot of speculation out there, but no one knows for sure. What will be that final straw to make the Fed start hiking? But that does seem to be the next direction, again, barring some sort of a market collapse or other COVID outbreaks, I guess. Mark, great chatting with you, buddy. Always fun chatting with you on Fridays. Thanks for recapping what we saw this week, and we'll chat again soon. Have a great weekend there, Mark.
Thank you. Good luck to everybody.